help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
Take me alive, I'm getting high with my 4-5 cocked on these suckers, time to die. Even as a youngster, causing ruckus on the back of the bus. I was a fool all through high school, kicking up dust. But now I'm labeled as a troublemaker. Who can you blame? Smoking weed helped me take away the pain. So I'm hopeless, rolling down the freeway, swerving. Don't worry, I'm about to crash up on the curb, cause my business is bloody. Maybe if they tried to understand me, what should I do? I had to feed my family, what else could I do? I'm slanging with the homies, hanging with the phonies in the club. Got my mind no danger, never been a stranger to homicide. My city's full of gangbangers in my vibes. Why do we die at early age? He was so young, but still a victim of the 12 gauge. My memories of a corpse, mind full of sick thoughts. And I ain't going back to court, so fuck what you thought. I'm drinking Hennessy, running from my enemies. Will I live to be 23 and so much pain?
On that rough life, running crazy wild as a kid, and growing tough with a knife, and living tripe on the regular, walking out competitors, see a figure moving, check them down like a fucking predator, getting trouble every day in school, act a fool, and you know I had to break every rule, showing off for the business, cause I had the mad breath, so I had to watch my back when it was time to step, but my crime is the grimiest with love for me, oh pop pop, it's in the sucker up above for me, and yo, currency kept passing me by, but I didn't cry. Bro got hit off of the pack and started selling coke. And now the money's looking lovely. Hop the drop top and now the bitches wanna rub me. Kick them the game, it's all the same. I kick it back, yo. Give them slack, yo. And now they label me the Mac, yo. People check it. Get disrespected if you front on the bird, man. You heard, man. Catch a couple shots from the Glock in my hand. Damn, at least I'm realistic with my biscuit. You know you get your head twisted, so run for cover. Me and my man got a plan, kicking major dust. So if you're look for the gauge to bust. A lot of pressure with the street fame. It's a deep game and my mama always crying. Yo, there's so much pain.
They got me mobbing like I'm loped and ready to get my slug on. I load my clip and slip my motherfucking gloves on. I ain't scared to blast only suckers if they test me. Trucks, I got my Glock. Cop player if they press me. Bust. I'm a sweater, passion, better buckets. I ain't looking when I'm blasting. I'm a nut, I'm drinking in the sea and getting high on the lookout for my enemies. Don't wanna die, tell me why, cause the stress getting major. A buck 50 across the face with my razor. What can I do but be a thug until I'm dead and gone? Keep my brain on the game and stay headstrong. These sorry bastards wanna kill me in my sleep. I'm really cannot see, and every day is just a struggle. Steady thugging on the streets and I've been. I'll be living this life. I know you feel me.
There's
so much pain.
Peace
and love, family.
You are listening to It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio.
And it's presented like a jewel.
Enriching, encouraging, and engaging our youth.
Here on iHeart Radio.
With influential guests such as
Susan Taylor.
We're a community in crisis. And we have to step up. We have to stand up, we have to speak up, we have to work together.
Jasiri X.
And then because we have Facebook and Twitter and we're able to share this information, the information is getting out there more.
Dr. Julia Hare.
Because we live in a racist society and you can get arrested, black boys, for walking while black, thinking while black, driving while black, and anything you're doing while black.
Dick Gregory.
I can go and tell you why this program you have is so beautiful.
that one, truth don't never have to be validated by ignorance. But ignorance will never validate truth.
This is It's Bigger Than Hip-Hop Radio. Tune in every Friday from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern on WWWEAM 1100 on iHeartRadio.
We hear now.
1100Atlanta.com.
And so again, I said, you know, what you're doing is very important. And a lot of times when you do shows like this, you must have people listen. Get a tape recorder or make the tape available.
Hit us up on the hotline at 404-603-8770.
And now,
Jeff Hodges.
What's good, everybody? What's good? Welcome to another edition of It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. I'm your host, Jeff Hodges.
And I'm your girl, Shauna.
Yes, yes, yes. And once again, we are definitely excited to be in the building to bring y'all another episode of It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. Tonight, we got a real special one for you, like always. I like saying that. You know what I mean? So check it out. So tonight, a special guest who's joining us, who's not a stranger to the show, he's been around. You know, he's rocked out with us a couple of times. He's coming through. Producer, director, and writer D. Chance Berry is joining us. Welcome to the show, D. Chance.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, my brother. Thank you.
It's definitely an honor and pleasure. You know, we walked this walk before, so it's like having an old friend coming to visit.
Yes, sir.
Now,
how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Listen, I'm in Chicago, out of L.A. for a moment, visiting family and taking in Chicago and actually shooting some B-roll and some interviews for Dark Girls 2 here in Chicago.
And the work never ends. And that's definitely what we're going to chop it up about today. You're coming out with that second half, Dark Girls 2. You definitely did your thing with the documentary Bringing Light to Dark Girls, looking at colorism in the black community, you know, and beyond. And you talked about a lot of different things affecting women. And now you're ready to do it again.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We're ready to do it again.
Now, I want to know, what was the inspiration to begin Dark Girls in the first place?
You know what? It began in probably about 2008, 2009. I was coming out of doing a producing, actually, the Sam Cooke story for American Masters with a friend of mine named John Antonelli. And we had just wrapped that up and got it on PBS American Masters. And I was in my backyard, and Bill Duke called me up and said, you know, we should work together. I like your work. And, you know, Bill's coming out of Hollywood and doing a Hollywood thing, and I come out of the documentary world. And he said, we should do something on black women. And the next thing you know, I'm calling it Dark Girls, and we're sitting in my backyard working it out, and next thing I know, we're shooting it. And the thing that was so interesting about doing Dark Girls 1 was the fact that Bill and I happened to be two dark-skinned men who were two dark-skinned little boys who did not could not get dates and were ridiculed about our color and that sort of thing. So we had gone through the pain of being, you know, ousted for being dark-skinned and as little boys. So we knew what that pain was like, but we knew that for women it was doubled or tripled. And that, so we had an emotional connection to doing Dark Girls.
Indeed, indeed.
So that's how it started.
Now, since making your initial document, like you said, Dark Girls 1, looking at the issues of intercultural colorism within the black American community, how has the conversation around this issue changed from when you began the project in 2011, now with 2018, Dark Girls 2 coming out soon?
I think we started a wave around the world, not only here in the United States, a wave around the world about colorism. All of a sudden, after Dark Girls hit, when the trailer hit, and it hit like, you know, I think it hit like over 10 or 11 million, it went viral, it went crazy. Mm-hmm. And we were not expecting that to happen, but we knew that there was an issue out there that needed to be tapped into. And so when it hit, it's like, wow, this is crazy. So, you know, Since the time of that and since the time it's airing on OWN, thank you to Oprah, indeed, and now Stars and other channels, the industry, the media industry, I think fashion, and there have been several conversations around the United States and around the planet about colorism and self-esteem for dark-skinned women and for women as for women totally. So I think it's helped bring the situation to light into conversation, and I know that there's been some healing that has been done also. Also, I know on the academic level that universities and colleges now are teaching courses. It's a part of the teaching tool of talking about Black America and about women's issues. So we were blessed with that. So we move forward.
Now, I tell you one thing. The whole dark girls movement definitely hit home for me because I am a dark-skinned woman myself. Growing up, I've always heard the statement, you're pretty to be dark-skinned.
Yeah.
Now, I never understood whether I should take that as a compliment or an insult. So, coming from you, which one should I take that as?
You know what? You take it as a compliment with a little bit of a side eye.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The side eye comes at the fact that, you know, sometimes people are ignorant. And I don't mean ignorant in terms of being saying people are stupid, but ignorant in the fact that they just don't know enough or been educated enough that to say that to someone is a bit of a slap in the face.
Right.
Is that, why can't you say, you know, for a light-skinned girl, you're pretty, or for a white girl, you're pretty, or for a fat girl, you're pretty, or for a skinned girl, you're pretty. They don't say that.
Right.
And if they do say that, they don't say that often. But I'm saying is that I hear more that, you know, you're really, really pretty to be a dark-skinned girl. I was like, right. Well, what else could she be?
Or why can't I just be pretty?
Right.
Yeah, why can't you just be pretty? Everybody else is just pretty.
Right.
You know?
So why do you feel the need for this follow-up for Dark Girls 2?
Man, listen, I was getting all kind of emails over the last 3 or 4 years when I mentioned that I was thinking about doing it. And then when I finally announced that I was doing Dark Girls 2, I got bombarded by a bunch of emails and Facebook situations to sisters saying, like, "You, Mr. Barry, you need to leave this alone," and da-da-da-da. I never had a problem with this, and, you know, this is water, you know, water under the bridge. So I'm saying is that, what I'm saying to these women, okay, fine, you've never had a problem with it, and you got over it,
right.
But there are women who are still dealing with this who are younger and way older than you who never dealt with it. So are you telling me that these women who have these stories of pain and not glory like yours are to be dismissed? Mm. Is that what you're telling me, that their stories don't mean anything anymore?
Okay.
So what I'm saying in this documentary is basically focusing on the healing process. What's the healing look like for dark-skinned women and for women, period, of color? When it comes to colorism, what's the healing look like? So, yeah, there are stories of pain still, and there's some stories, beautiful stories of glory, and some deep stuff about, you know, mental illness involved in all of this also, you know, in terms of self-esteem and what the pilgrims have done, some pilgrims have done to us in terms of media,
right.
And what they set out to do in terms of having these standards that are set by white gay men sometimes, and white women who know nothing or care anything about the shape and the color and the existence of women of our women.
I totally agree with you with every aspect of that. And you know, when you talk about the healing process, I think it starts with the young girls. And if you notice now in the stores, we have Barbie dolls for these young girls that are coming more in color, different shapes, different sizes. All of the Barbie girls don't have this luxurious hair. You know, they have the natural African American women hair. So I definitely believe the healing process starts with that. But I do want to ask you, when creating Dark Girls, were you a little skeptical about how the light-skinned community would take your film?
No, I didn't. I didn't give it that much thought. All I knew is that Bill and I had a one-on-one situation. And the one-on-one situation was this. We had to become honest with one another. I said, Bill, do you or I have a preference when it comes to the choices of women that we want in our lives as dating or wives. Mm-hmm. And Bill said, yeah, he had a preference. Mm. And I was like, wow. And then I said I had no preference because my self-esteem was so low coming up as a child and as a teenager that whoever loved me, I loved them back. Mm-hmm. So I had no choice, you know. So as growing up into my teens and into becoming a male, I gravitated towards people who loved me. And then, you know, I got enough self-esteem up to say, well, you know what? I don't have a choice. So I like dark, I like light, I like medium, I like all kinds. There's a whole spectrum of women. But I just like smart, good-looking, driven women.
Indeed. You're listening to It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. That's our very special guest, documentary filmmaker D. Chansberry. We're talking about Dark Girls 2. Let them know where they can find that out when it comes out, where they can keep up with them trailers and everything else that's going on with you, Chance.
You know what, man? I'm a Facebook junkie, so everything everything I do is on my Facebook page. It's D. Chansberry, Facebook page. Or you can go to Dark Girls 2 on the Facebook page to find out even more on what's going on. So right now we're running a GoFundMe campaign to raise money for... to finish up Dark Girls 2. So we're trying to raise $110,000 right now by July 28th so we can finish this bad boy up and get it going. So I'm in Chicago right now trying to do some work out here and trying to get some things done. But it costs. It costs a lot to do these productions and get these rights and pay these people to do the job, you know, properly.
Now, initially, we spoke about Dark Girls 1 coming out, you partnering up with Bill Dukes, and you guys, you know, reaching out and coming together like you did. What was the reason that you guys are not doing Part 2 together?
Bill and I actually parted ways in the middle of editing Dark Girls 1.
Okay.
But we had to stay together, you know, politically, to go out and be the face of Dark Girls 1 on tour and in the media.
Right.
But we had pretty much I had said I couldn't do this again. So Bill went on to do Light Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And that got the reception it got, and I had nothing to do with that. And then Bill went on to release a book, Girls Book,
mm-hmm.
and I had nothing to do with that. In the meantime, while he was doing that, I was doing working on two other films called The Church House and Sexuality in the Black Church and The Black Line, Profile of the African American Female, Part 3, that are now out now.
Right.
So we split ways, and I decided to go on and do Part 2 of Dark Girls alone, because I think it just would we just had difference of opinion in terms of creatively difference of opinion how things should go.
No doubt.
So, I wish him well. He's a great director and actor for theatrical pieces.
Absolutely. We definitely have Bill join us here as well. So we salute him also. We take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
What you talking about? Check it.
What's up? This is Damian Crazy Legs Hall, co-owner of WWRN Radio. Keep us locked 24/7 and enjoy our classic hip-hop and R&B station.
Oh, yeah, baby. It ain't over.
Don't touch that dial, baby.
This is Karen White, and breakfast is over. It's dinner time now, every Friday on iHeartRadio. It's Bigger Than Hip Hop with your host, Jeff Hodges.
Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Yo, I cannot understand why the parents and the teachers and everybody trying to preach to the kids, the young generation. Yo, what's the deal, bro, Charlie Brown?
I don't know what the deal is. You have to ask my partner, Dingo D.
Yo, tell us, D. Tell us, D.
Confusion, G.
What's up?
Hey, oh, man. It's just another case of that OPTA.
Oh, man.
After school, I wrote notes and took quotes from Shakespeare and other types of rhymes to show you that I care. For things like together forever till you're my only one.
Only one.
It was special, I could say it was a loving one. You would say someone's knocking at my window.
Knock, knock.
Someone's ringing my bell.
Ding dong.
It's about 2 in the morning.
Yo, geez, what the hell's going on?
It's just another case of that OPTA.
But nevertheless, it goes to show my potential. And even though our love was three-dimensional.
One, me, two,
you,
three,
you pops.
Now what am I to do? I had to transform into an educated lad. Going around doing chores for your dad. Playing a duck, wearing sweaters and shoes. Chilling with pop, just listen to the blues.
And we're back. It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. On the phone is our very special guest, film director D. Chance Berry, talking about his new documentary, Part 2, The Dark Girls, coming out soon. Y'all go check out that GoFundMe and help support this cause. Chance, talk about the emotional, or if it was any emotional, difficult times for you personally in the process of making this film, and how did it impact you?
How emotional it was, Tommy, you say?
Yes, it was emotional, difficult, and how did it impact you?
Brother, it's always emotional for me. Any of the films that I do, if it doesn't hit me in my heart and I don't cry over it when I'm writing it, then I won't do it.
Right.
Every film I've done 17 documentaries, and 15 of them have been about my heart. Because I love our people. I love black people. And I want to see us standing tall. I want to see us as fathers and mothers. I want to see us as responsible people. I want to see us as political figures that we can trust. I just want to see us as magical people that we are, as blessed people and magical people are that we are. So anything I can do that will uplift and put light on subjects that we don't want to talk about, that we should be talking about, because it's about the healing process. Mm-hmm. That's the way I'm going. And I've dedicated my life to that.
Absolutely. And I read a quote where you said, pain is pain and all women can be dark girls. Mm-hmm. Talk about that.
Well, I had gotten an email from a couple of women in Warsaw, Poland. And I was like, well, ain't no sisters in Warsaw that I know about, you know, in Poland. So this must be for some, you know, these Europeans. And these women were writing me saying that how they connected to the trailer of Dark Girls,
right,
and how they understood the pain. And I said, you know what? It's not about so much the color of the woman's skin. It's the color of the pain that is dark, that resonates with all women.
That's profound.
So that's what got Dark Girls 1 international flavor, because women around the world, whether they were, you know, Caucasian or people, women of color, they understood what that meant, to be in pain.
No doubt.
I want to know, during your research, what exactly did you find was the main reason people were gravitating more towards a lighter woman rather than a darker woman? What were they saying was better for them?
Well, for black males, it's a generational thing, because the men who came out of the, I guess the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, and early 70s. Always wanted the thing that they couldn't have was a white woman.
Mm-hmm.
when they became successful.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of that has just translated over to some of our basketball and football and baseball stars,
right,
that they have gotten, and some of our musical stars also, that they have dated or have married white women. And not black women. So, you know, I don't know if it's part of the self-esteem thing of not being able to have something that you're not supposed to have on both sides, on her side and on his side,
mm-hmm.
you know. But, you know, today, in the South, if I'm traveling in Alabama and Mississippi, I see more white women with brothers than I've ever seen before in my life.
Yes,
in the South, in the Deep South.
Right.
So that has to be some type of retaliation.
Rebelling against their daddies.
I'm sorry.
No, I said, yeah, it is. They're rebelling against their daddies.
Yeah, exactly. And exactly. It's like, you know what? The hell with all of that. I'm going to love who I want to love.
Exactly.
And the spirit part of me is way understanding of that. Oh, you should love who you should fall in love with.
Mm-hmm.
And love has no color. So, but, you know, also understanding, you know, what certain people did who don't look like you to us, you know, there's that runs in the back of my mind also from time to time.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's hard to shake that because it's that kind of sentiment or that kind of thought pattern has become a part of black DNA.
Chance, it's definitely been an honor and a pleasure. You know, I always love when you come to talk about you doing what you do from the heart, as always. You guys be sure to check out Dark Girls One and definitely follow them on all social media so y'all can stay tuned and support that GoFundMe so we get that Dark Girl 2 out there so y'all can see what's popping. True?
Man, it's all good and gravy.
No doubt. Give us some closing remarks before you go, Chance.
All I want for everybody who's listening is to be safe, to become happier, to live your purpose, and understand that you have meaning on this planet. Mm-hmm. And it's not about you. It's about helping other people on the planet.
Absolutely.
And just stop, and for those who are listening, who have some people who have been killed by bullets and all that sort of thing, is that pray for these people and then take action.
Mm.
Pray, take action. Take positive action against these people, positive action, not go out and kill the person because they killed somebody else.
Right.
Take prayer, then positive action. That's what we need.
I loved it.
Definitely.
I loved it.
Continue success to you, Chance, and keep me posted so we can get you out back on deck when you get that launch and going. You understand?
Yes, man, and I love you both, and thank you both for having me and taking the time out to listening.
And indeed. If you need someone in Dark Girls, too, I got you.
where are you?
I'm in Atlanta.
I'm coming.
And he will be here. Chance, it's been a pleasure, man. Thanks so much. Stick around. Listen in. I got my cousin, two-time middleweight champ, former champ, and also now documentary filmmaker, Yahya McClain. We're going to get in on another social issue talking about parental alienation. We're going to take a quick break, give you that moment of hip-hop, and we'll be right back.
My name is Miss Kim B, announcing the official Praise Dancers Award coming on Saturday, June the 23rd, 2018 at the Georgia International Convention Center in College Park, Georgia. Doors open at 2. It's time to move and groove in the spirit. It's bigger than hip hop. Breakfast is over. It's dinner time now, every Friday, 10 p.m., live on iHeartRadio. See you on the stage.
It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio presents A Moment in Hip Hop History with Mocha Brown. The most controversial rap group with cultural significance is Public Enemy. Throughout the 80s, Public Enemy gave us thought-provoking hits. P.E. features two frontmen with totally different styles. Rapper Chuck D delivers anti-establishment rhymes in an authoritative voice, while his sidekick Flavor Flav was comic relief. The two combined with the militant-style backup dancers led by Professor Griff made a powerful statement on stage. The group formed at Adelphi University, where Carl Reidenhauer, a.k.a. Chuck D, studied graphic design and worked at the student radio station. Public Enemy's use of cut-and-paste techniques of samples, piercing sirens, and relentless beats was trailblazing. P.E. made hardcore rap that was revolutionary. And in 2013, they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Music Hall of Fame. It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio salutes Public Enemy, true pioneers of hip hop. This is Mocha Brown with your moment in hip hop history. To get up and get down, 911
Hey, and we back. Check it out, y'all. For the second half, we're going to continue on with our addressing social ills and also continue with our, they are not unfamiliar to the show, guests. So tonight, for the second half, in the building, two-time cruiser middleweight champion.
Cruiserweight
champion.
No, not middleweight at all.
Just cruiserweight. Just
cruiserweight.
There we go. Take out the middle. And that's be my cousin, Yaya McClain, also a documentary filmmaker. Come to talk about that documentary he put out there. Y'all know what we're talking about. What's going on, cuzzo?
Man, you know, same old two-step, bro. Just trying to hold it in the road.
No doubt, no doubt. So now, you know, walk this walk, you know, took me with you over there to the Chelsea Film Festival. That was a great honor. Salute, salute. You know, became director of the year, doing your thing. And now you taking it to the next level.
Man, you know, like I always say, man, first of all, I appreciate everything you do, man. You know, thanks for having me on the show and always supporting everything that I'm doing.
Oh, no doubt.
And remember, I got something for you that I forgot.
Okay.
I jerked you twice, so, we're gonna get into that later on. All
right.
But yeah, man, you know, it's just an honor to be here, man. And you're talking about all these things that I'm doing as far as with this documentary. And like I always say, this is not something that I just woke up one day and said, you know what, I'm gonna do a documentary about parental alienation.
Right.
Nah, it didn't happen like that at all, you know. It's something that, all right, we'll just go through it quickly. You know, of course, I'm from New York, Jamaica, Queens. It's a rough neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
My pops got killed when I was 3 years old in Jamaica, Queens on New York Boulevard, which left my moms to raise 3 boys on her own. I'm a Marine. I'm a veteran of the United States Marine Corps, and I'm a 2-time world champion. So basically, I've been fighting all my life. Mm-hmm. But this battle that we parents are all losing in the family law court system in America is by far the hardest fight I've ever been involved in. And therefore, that led me to do the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
What battle are you battling with the parental affiliation?
It's parental alienation and corruption in the family law court system. For instance, you know, I have a child.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of children. And one of them, I wasn't allowed to see for a year.
Not to cut you off. I think we should explain for the listeners and for this young lady
what
exactly is parental alienation.
Okay, parental alienation is when, well, parental alienation is basically, it's because of the court system.
Mm-hmm.
The court system is what allows this. And the way that they allow it is because in the case of divorce or separation with a child involved, the court system, alienates one parent from the child.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, it's the father. But it does happen to women as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, they create a need for child support, and through that collection process, through a thing called Title 4D from the Social Security Act, it allows the state to, through a collection process, to gain money. So for every dollar that's spent, the state gets a kickback.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made it into a $50 billion a year industry.
Right.
So if you, and that's on the low side.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a business that's gaining $50 million a year,
mm-hmm.
you ain't gonna end it because somebody's child or because a parent or whatever. So therefore, that's the reason we're fighting this ubiquitous problem all over America, you know?
Mm. Now, help me understand, because in those instances, most times it's the parents that decide to go, either one of the parents decide to go to the court and say, hey, my spouse isn't there for the kid. Can you please help me get
Absolutely.
Something from them, right?
Well, let me just get in there, too, because you know I got some of that happening to
right,
me, too.
Right, right.
So really where it starts out is, relationship could be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as the breakup come about, all of a sudden the husband, the father becomes in question about how he is with his children because mm-hmm. she's in her feelings or he's in his feelings because
right.
the percentages
but
range is different.
But
okay.
like she said though, they go to the courts.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Be it the man or the woman, they go to the court. Now, they could be in their feelings all they want if they keep it out of the courts and they deal with it
right
the way they're supposed to, right. amicably between two caring parents.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if it's done that way,
then this will be a different conversation.
It'll be a completely mm-hmm. different conversation.
Gotcha.
For instance, my daughter's mother, and when I had my daughter, I was like 21, 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I was wild. I was in the streets. I was traveling, boxing all over.
Mm-hmm.
And I did everything. But
it's okay.
but my daughter's mother held me down. Never to this day has she ever kept me from seeing my daughter.
Right.
Never. No matter what I did, she never kept me from seeing my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jackie, like always, I salute you because she's a G.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it doesn't have to be that way.
Right.
You know, but what happens a lot of times, especially when you're married, mm-hmm. and you have a divorce. Because now, going through the divorce, for one, in the state of Georgia, with a child involved, it's automatic that you have to go through parenting classes.
Mm.
That's the first money they make
after
you spend.
After a divorce?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That's the first money they make you spend.
They're going to kick off with that, right?
Yeah, they're going to get that money off the top. That's mandatory.
Oh, yeah.
And so it just starts from there. And then, like Jeff was saying, you know, when there's a bitter parent, or even when they see one parent wanting to really be involved in that child's life too much, they're like, aha,
right.
I see some money right there. Oh, yeah, we're not going to let him see the child. He's going to fight for that child.
Right.
Mm.
Or we're not going to let her see that child. She's going to fight for that child.
Mm-hmm.
So that automatically starts this perpetual battle.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you start spending, like, for instance, in my documentary, which is Casualties of War,
mm-hmm.
the movie. So Casualties of War, it stands for Warriors Against the Regime.
Right, I like
that. On my shirt, it used to say Women and the Regime because when I first got involved in this, I was like, that's another way for the white man to keep the black man down.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought. But as I got involved in this, I quickly learned because once I started reaching out to other people and looking for help because I'm losing in court and I ain't done nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, I start reaching out on Facebook and seeing these different fathers' rights groups, the fathers' mm-hmm. Rights movement, you know, parents for legal custody. I mean, all these different groups. The majority of them were white.
Mm.
And all of these white men embraced me mm-hmm. and helped educate me.
Mm-hmm.
So I quickly learned that it wasn't about gender. It wasn't a race thing. And then I started thinking that it was a gender thing. I was like, okay, well, it's all about they hating on the man. It's
mm-hmm.
all about the man.
Mm-hmm.
But then as I started traveling, because I spent 3 years doing this documentary, traveling mm-hmm. around the country. And as I traveled and started meeting more people and interviewing these women,
mm-hmm.
I learned that it happens to women as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about money. That's the bottom line, that it's all about money. And that's why I did the documentary,
mm-hmm.
so that we can help educate everyone, so that the people can learn. And I'm talking to the masses, because if we get the masses to understand this, that keep your business to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
God gave you that child. God did that between you and that woman or you and that man.
Mm-hmm.
And those, that's where it should stay. You shouldn't have to have nobody else come in and tell you what's going to happen with your son.
That was best.
Exactly, because
right.
they don't know you from nowhere.
Right.
And there should be no way that they are making money, reaping, making all this money off of our children's demise.
Mm-hmm.
Because the majority of America's social ills are due to fatherless homes.
Right.
But that's just because the stats are out on that. But what's the stats on the motherless homes? Because there's plenty people out there that don't have a mother in their life for no reason other than the court system.
Mm.
No reason other than the court system. So anybody that's listening, go to casualtiesofwarthemovie.com
mm-hmm.
and watch the documentary. You can see the trailer, but watch the documentary. Just hit the button that says watch now. I mean, that's real, because I need everybody to watch this, because my goal is for the whole world to know the truth of what's going on.
Right.
Because for one, if we get everyone to understand how it goes down, then these people will stay out of the courts.
Right.
They will stay out of the court system. If they stay out of the court system, this problem goes away. That's one. But the other one is so that we can get the masses behind us, so that we can make the amendments to the Constitution. We can, you know, repeal these Title 4Ds and Title 4Es.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, from the Social Security Act. Because, man, I mean, this stuff is such a ubiquitous problem, it makes absolutely no sense. You got people going to jail because they can't pay these astronomical amounts of money that the courts are putting on them.
The muscle.
You know, I got the basketball player, Joe Smith, mm-hmm. number one draft pick, spent almost $1 million fighting for his children. I got a doctor in there. He spent $500,000. He was a pediatrician. The children loved him up in New York. Mm-hmm. They took his business the way they just destroyed his whole life.
Wow.
You know, mm-hmm. I got Roy Jones Jr. in the documentary. I got Zaire Rahim in the documentary. All these are world champion boxers and Olympians. I got a dude in the documentary that protected the president, and now he can't see his children. Wow. How does that happen? How can you protect the president, but you can't see your own child?
Can I chime in? So I want to just play devil's advocate for a quick second. Okay. Do you believe that the court failed those homes in which the kid is taken away for good reasons, or the father or the mother is taken away for good reasons? Like, some parents are dealing with drugs or a different situation like that, where the court, in that case, helped the kid because they're taking them out of those situations. Now, is the court failing us in that way as well?
Well, if you're saying there's one parent that's on drugs?
Well, one or maybe two or however, just taking that child out of that environment.
In the rare cases where those things happen, because the majority of the time, it's about money.
Right.
You think so? Really?
Always.
Absolutely.
I don't know, guys.
You got to follow the trail. Listen, like you said, when you don't know
because you don't know.
Right.
And you won't know until you know.
Exactly.
That's facts.
Let's talk about who parental alienation affects. Let's talk about the children who've been now indoctrinated with all kinds of negative ideologies about the parent that's no longer in the household, and how they grow up and the effects that has on
them. Well, you know, like I said, there's another guy in the documentary who lives right here in Georgia, who's from Jersey, who he got bodies. Mm. And he spent 15 years in prison. Mm. And he swears it's because his father wasn't in his life. He swears that if his father was in his life, he wouldn't have made those decisions. You know, so the effects, the mental, I mean, this is where I get emotional, because I just beg God to just not affect my child in that way, mm-hmm. you know. But the mental abuse that they're suffering at the hands of one bitter parent and the backing of the court system is tumultuous. I mean, it really is criminal. And anyone that alienates a parent from the other should be arrested for abuse. That's child abuse. That's child abuse. You're taking away the molding periods in a child's life. For instance, I hate to use me as an example, but that's what I know right now. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot in my life. I've been all over the world. I have a lot of experience in a lot of different things. I don't know everything, no, of course not. But the things that I've experienced and the things that I've done, the people I've encountered, the things that I've learned, I could add so much to my son's life.
Right.
And these are the precious years that he's most impressionable. Mm-hmm. And for me to not be there and not be allowed to do these things, and for him to be able to be up under me and get that knowledge and wisdom is criminal. Mm-hmm. It's criminal.
I definitely agree with you on, you know, growing up without a father in the household and how it affects you as an adult, because I personally didn't grow up with my father in my life due to his own personal reasons or what have you. And I now, me and my sister and even my mom, we have conversations now, and we see how it's changing me. And even just the way I look at guys, like, I unintentionally pick guys that's like my father. You know, in ways that, in some lies he would say or just things he would do, I now deal with that. And guys that I pick, and I'm like, wow, you're just like my dad. And it's like, is this I didn't grow up with him, but I know his ways. It's like, it's still in me. Like, I'm still seeing him in every other person. So
it definitely
affects people when you grow up without a father or even a mother. You know, a woman, we need our moms to show us how to be a mother.
We need
you
both
know?
Parents.
We need both.
That's
need
the way both. It was set up. God don't make no mistakes.
You can't make a baby without wanting to,
God
right?
don't make no mistakes. Right,
yeah, right, that's true. Right.
So how can anybody go against that?
Yeah.
Especially, now I'm saying when you have two fit parents. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There are some people that don't need their children.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. No, it's really. And that's why I was saying, so in that case, dude, is the court fail us when they take the kid away from that parent.
But see, that is such a fine line because they use that so much.
Right.
They use that so much because what happens in a case like that, they're going to take a child away and put a child in foster care.
Mm-hmm.
When they put that child in foster care, they get a kickback from the government.
That's true.
So therefore, it's like a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm. You okay?
My leg.
Wait, I'm like.
Check it out. You listening to It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back.
Yeah.
Peace and blessings. This is Mama Soul. Breakfast is over and it is dinner time now. Every Friday live on iHeartRadio. It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. Peace.
This is none other than Marlena, a.k.a. Lois Lane. Breakfast is over. It's dinner time now on It's Bigger Than Hip Hop with your host, Jeff Hodges, on iHeartRadio every Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern.
It's bigger, it's bigger, it's bigger than hip hop, yeah.
We're going to these fights.
All right. And we back. It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. Right here in the building is our very special guest, documentary filmmaker Yahya McClain. We talking about that film, Casualties of War, now made into a movie. What was the decision factor for you switching it from the doc to the movie?
No. It's still a documentary.
Okay.
I just re-edited it and changed the name.
Gotcha.
Because, like I said, you know, initially it was Casualties of War, Women and the Regime.
Right.
Because of my lack of knowledge and the way that I was being dealt with. So as I learned more, I learned that this problem happens to women as well. Mm-hmm. I met plenty of women. There are plenty of women in my documentary that have been alienated, that have been put in jail, that have been taken away from their children. So that's the reason that I changed the name, because we are all warriors fighting the regime. So it's warriors against the regime.
You got a nice slogan. The repeal is real.
The repeal is real.
And you're talking about changing Title D4 and Title E4. Talk about that and let us
Title
understand.
Title 4D, Title 4E.
Right.
You know, like I was saying, Title 4 D and Title 4E are about child support and foster care. And both of those, there's also Title 4A, but all these things are just generating funds for the states. So the states do these things because they're getting federal funding. They're getting federal funding for taking our children. How do you pay someone to take our children away? This is just as bad. And you know what makes me so mad is that, not to say that we shouldn't be concerned with children coming into our countries.
Right. But seeing it right in your
but
face.
But did you see the outpour of people that got involved and that stood up and spoke against that?
Mm-hmm.
But what about our children? Charity starts at home.
Mm-hmm.
What about our children? Our children right here in America are being taken away from us. Our children are being tormented. So where's the outcry and the outpour and all the love for our children?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, when I start seeing so many people stepping up and speaking out about that, it just enraged me because I'm like, how do you not care about your children right here? What about American citizens? I'm a United States Marine. I've served for my country, but yet you won't fight for my children. But you're going to run to the rescue of these other children.
Crazy.
What has been your biggest accomplishment with Casualties of War?
Just as a fighter, I've been boxing all my life, and I went to film school for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to say I'm gonna do a documentary on it and get it done, that's big.
You're saying something that you worked hard for, and it's happening.
And so, like, when the brother was just talking earlier, he was talking about the GoFundMes and
mm-hmm.
all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard. Mm-hmm. It's right. So hard to raise money, especially in my case. He did 15 docs.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's hard for him. So you know how hard it is for me. I'm a boxer. They're like, who are you? Why should we give you money? You know, but, I mean, it's hard. So a lot of the things that I had planned for the documentary, and I didn't raise the money that I needed.
Mm-hmm.
I had to, you know, switch up and go to Plan B. Mm-hmm. But, like I said, I went to school. I edited it. I shot it.
Hello.
You know, I scored it. You know, I mean, I did what I had to do. I had help. I had a few people that helped me out,
right.
You know. But, I mean, for the most part, I just got to do what I got to do. Okay. And because my goal is for everyone to see this documentary, because once you see this documentary, you will not believe the things that we're dealing with. Mm. You just won't. There's another kid in the documentary. I mean, his daughter died.
Wow.
No one told him, and the mother still collected child support.
Are you serious?
Sure, wow. So many crazy cases. Talking
daughter
about
died.
Wow.
His mother, no one ever told him, and the mother still collected child support. Mm.
I'm speechless.
Left us speechless. You left us speechless.
So with that being said, everybody go to CasualtiesOfWarTheMovie.com and watch this documentary.
Yes, definitely.
Talk about what you want at the end of the day people to walk away from after seeing the documentary.
After seeing the documentary, I want everyone to, one, be aware of exactly what's going on. Mm-hmm. I want everyone to know what's really going on. And I want to dispel that stereotype that a lot of people automatically assume. As soon as you say, I haven't seen my son, well, what'd you do?
Right, right.
That's the first thing that somebody want to come with.
Right.
If I haven't seen my daughter, well, what'd you do? You know, and there's so much more to that. There's so much more to it. So I want people to really just to learn and have their eyes open so that if they decide to have a child, if they decide to get into this relationship, that they can think twice in the case that they break up, because this world that we live in right now is so crazy. Mm-hmm. Divorce rate is shooting through the roof.
Right.
And so if they have a child and they end up in divorce and they see this documentary, they will have a lot of knowledge on what not to do, like going to the court. Mm-hmm. They will learn how to keep it out of the court, deal with it between the two of them. Find somebody in the community. If you're in church, go to church. If you're a Muslim, go to the mosque. Mm-hmm. If whatever it is. If you're in a gang, get the gang leader to sit y'all down. Get somebody to talk to y'all.
Besides the court.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that you can work this thing out and y'all can come up with a parenting plan that is going to benefit the child.
Right.
Without killing each other.
No. Do you have any other passions that you can see yourself making a film or documentary about?
Oh man,
I did several films.
Yeah.
I've done a few films.
Right.
This was my first documentary. Mm-hmm. I think about a lot of things, but every time I start to write, mm-hmm. I'm like, what am I doing this for right now? I got work to do here. I got work to do with this documentary. Mm. Just because it's done doesn't mean I'm done.
Right.
You know, and even if, when, not if, when I get to the point where I can be involved in my son's life like I'm supposed to be, mm-hmm. I'm still not done. Mm. Because I'm fighting for everybody else's children. Mm-hmm. I'm fighting for not just the children. I'm fighting for, like you and you and mm-hmm. you. Everyone is affected because the children, a lot of times, that get affected by this, like old boy said, he was killing people, mm-hmm. you know, robbing people. People, when they go through mental stress like this, you don't know what they're going to do.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But, you know, you have some people who would take that story of that young man and just, in a sense, say that he uses that as an excuse to do those type of things. What do you say about those situations?
I say that when you say that something is an excuse, you have to get in depth with it. You don't know the whole story. I mean, all I told you is what happened real quick. But if you sit down with that young man mm-hmm. and you talk to him and you listen to him and you see what's going on for real, mm-hmm. then you'll see what's happening. And like I said, once you have your eyes open, once you have broadened your knowledge of what's going on, you won't think like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That won't be your first thought. That's my whole point. I want everyone to learn from the documentary so that they can quit automatically saying, oh boy, what'd he do? Oh, deadbeat dad.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, mama. She must be on drugs. Right, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, that's the kind of stuff that we need to get away with and get to the facts and see what's really going on and deal with it. Mm-hmm. Don't just learn about it. Deal with it. Come out. Just like they came out for the foreign children.
Right.
Yeah.
come out.
Yeah.
You know, we've had several parent marches in D.C. Mm-hmm. You know, I go up there and speak to the front of legislators and try to make things happen and let people know what's going on. Mm-hmm. But we've had several of these marches. But the only people that are there are the ones that's going through it.
Mm-hmm.
We already know what we're going through.
Right.
We need others to come out. We need the masses to come get behind it.
Is there a way to include the courts, right?
Yeah, 1 minute.
Without making everything in so bad? Can including the court be good? No?
No. You're not listening.
No,
you're going to have to watch the documentary.
No, I'm just... Because sometimes it's not always bad. So I'm just asking, just to end it.
No, the majority of the time, it's always bad.
It's definitely bad.
Whenever you go to the court, it's bad.
It's a done deal.
Whenever the first thing you got to do is come out your pocket with some money.
For your child, that's a bad deal.
When they tell you, you can't see your child unless you pay this person to watch you, $50 an hour to watch you see your child, come on.
Okay. Yeah, it's definitely been a pleasure and an honor. Y'all heard it. Go out there and get that documentary, Casualties of War. Give them that website again.
CasualtiesofWarTheMovie.com. Hey, and check it out. Next weekend, we're going to be in Macon, Georgia at the Shrine Temple. It's a boxing event. I'm a ring announcer now, and my cousin Jeff got to be there because I stood him up on two of the ones before. So I got you. The 21st, we in Macon,
baby. Say no more. There it is. You heard it first. It's bigger than hip-hop. Y'all check it out. And I want to thank all y'all listening live and in the archives. Thanks for coming through, Cuzzo. Thanks for our earlier guest, documentary filmmaker D. Chance Berry. Y'all heard it. We talking about social ills. We want to heal our people. We want to use the platform to do what's right. Y'all check them out. Make sure y'all support them. And at the end of the day, peace and love.
Yeah. Peace and love, family.
You are listening to It's Bigger Than Hip-Hop Radio.
And it's presented like a jewel.
Enriching, encouraging, and engaging our youth. Here on iHeartRadio. With influential guests such as Susan Taylor.
We're a community in crisis, and we have to step up. We have to stand, speak up. We have to work together.
Jasiri X.
And then because we have Facebook and Twitter and we're able to share this information, the information is getting out there more.
Dr. Julia Hare.
Because we live in a racist society and you can get arrested, black boys, for walking while black, thinking while black, driving while black, and anything you're doing while black.
Dick Gregory.
I can go and tell you why this program you have is so beautiful. That one, truth don't never have to be validated by ignorance. But ignorance will never validate truth.
This is It's Bigger Than Hip-Hop Radio. Tune in every Friday from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern on WWWEAM 1100 on iHeartRadio.
We here now.
1100Atlanta.com.
And so again, I said, you know, what you're doing is very important. And a lot of times when you do shows like this, you must have people listen, get a tape recorder, or make the tape available.
Hit us up on the hotline at 404-603-8770.